Blog Talk Radio.
Unavailable right now. Please try again later.
La persona que usted ha llamado no está disponible en este momento. Por favor, intente de nuevo más tarde.
Message 2. Switch 599. The person you have called is unavailable right now. Please try again later.
La persona que usted ha llamado no está disponible en este momento. Por favor, intente de nuevo más tarde.
Message 2. Switch 599.
Thank you.
At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options. At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up.
I don't know, half an hour? It should be all right. Should be all right. Is it really? That's a bummer. Well, the other ones in the fridge might be all right. Put it in the sink and I'll drink it when it... put it in the sink and I'll drink it when it gets a little less frozen. Pour it in a cup. Goodbye. I don't know. I didn't give him that. He's just doing that thing. Hello? Somebody there? I think that my voice might be on a radio show, but I'm not going to do a very good job of answering questions because I can't hear anything. But it's nice to be on the show, everybody. My name is Manu Antirame. For those of you who don't know who I am, I was Ichev on Star Trek Voyager and Billy on One Tree Hill. I've also done like 50 other projects. I recently produced a movie called Hell on the Border. It came out last year with Ron Perlman, myself, Frank Grillo, Fifth Passenger. Hello.
Hey, Manu.
Hello.
Manu.
Hey,
Manu,
look at that.
Yeah, it's Joe Castro.
Hey, Joe, what's up, dude?
How you doing over there?
I'm all right.
All right. I was just listening to your...
What?
I was just listening to your amazing resume, and I was like, this is going to be a good interview. I was like, wow. That's amazing. You've done some amazing work. And
well,
I'm just...
Was that going through on the air?
Yeah. Well, I heard it. I was like, wow, that's impressive. I'm so honored to have you in a movie that I produced, you know. It's like you totally shine through in everything you do. And every role you play, and you totally brought our movie to life. You know that. Yeah.
Oh, Xenophobia was fun. Seeing that movie in the theaters was such a treat.
I felt like that
movie was meant to see with a crowd because it's so funny at the same time as it is a horror film. It's just a kick in the pants. So it was cool to see with a crowd.
That's very kind of you to say, and you know, you are a big part of why that movie is so successful, holding it all together with those wraparounds and the stuff that you did in the film. I know you were only there for a short period of time, but you made such a big impact on the film. And when everybody knew that you were involved in it, they really tried to bring their A game to whatever they were doing before we actually shot your scene. So, you know, it makes a big difference when you have real star talent in the room with everyone else.
That's
like
kind
yourself.
Of you the same, I think.
Yeah, it's absolutely 100% true. And that's one thing people know about me. I tell the truth.
And you work like crazy, man. I see on Facebook you're like on every horror movie getting made these days. It seems like you're out there just hustling.
I'm very grateful and very honored to be so busy right now. What is it exactly you're working on at this moment? Anything that I should be aware of?
Yeah, well, right now I'm looking to make this movie called Star Crew, which is started out as the Circuit Film Project, and it's
right,
a sci-fi horror comedy. It's sort of a broad comedy.
Ooh.
It's in the neighborhood of Galaxy Quest meets like Shaun of the Dead.
I love Galaxy Quest. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. So it's sort of like a crew of old aging Star Trek-like actors on a show called Star Crew basically have to fight an interdimensional cyborg and his brother and their army of zombie robots that are actually characters from their show that have come to this dimension. And the actors at this rap party have to travel to the dimension where their show really exists and get help from the actual crew of characters they play to fight these things. And it's hilarious and fun. And we have some A-list talent that is looking to carry the film for us. And
that
basically we need to raise another,
amazing.
Yeah, 300,000-400,000, and we're good to go for 2.5 million.
You know,
and I
you're
hope
going
to
get
it off
that,
at
I
the end
think.
Of the year, you know. It's just we'll see whether the COVID regulations allow us to do it and the scheduling of our actors allow us to do it this year or not.
Well, I know there's an army of people out there that are ready and willing to make the vision happen. And there are at least two of them sitting over here in my household, me and my partner, Stephen. Whatever you need.
Well, I was wondering.
You just
I'd
pick
love
up the
to
phone
have you
and
on
say,
board
yo,
for
I
wardrobe
need this.
And makeup. Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah.
We got a lot of blood and guts in this movie, so I would love to have you guys.
Whatever you need, you just make sure that I know the details, and I will make it happen for you.
Cool.
That's how it happens.
Thank you.
Yep. So where's is Mac on here?
I don't know. I felt like I didn't know if we're on the air or if we're just chatting or what.
I'm not sure. You know, that's how I met you. Matt introduced us. Yeah, by putting us together. I went to the screening of the
Benjamin Troubles
the,
way back in the day.
That's right. And that is such a crazy, wild movie. That was a crazy, wild movie too, though. The movie's kind of a wild, because it was very wild, idea, you know.
Yeah, it
and,
was. It was, and a bunch of people with no money trying to make something happen, and we did. And we got it out there. And, kid
happy,
with magic pants.
And yeah, that's how we met. And then, like, I want to work with that guy. Yeah, that's how it happens. It's funny.
Yeah.
I feel like almost every person who I want to work with, if I can take the initiative to walk up to them and introduce myself and say hello and look them in the eye and say, I would be an honor to work with you one day, that somehow the universe brings us together and it actually happens. Seems like
well, yeah,
that's been happening lately.
The older you get and the less, you know, the starstruck you get by anybody in this town, if you drop that whole, like, ooh, you're a god kind of thing, and you just artist to artist say, hey, what's happening? What are you working on? Artists get together and make beautiful things happen. And I don't ever want to work. Like if I met some super big time director and he was a dick to me, I wouldn't want to work with him anyway. So it's just about, really, I wouldn't, you know, I hate working
with
people.
No, I get it. I know.
I 100% like,
agree.
You know,
I'll be
it's just no fun.
That's right. No, I mean, I'll be honest with you. Some of the of the experience I've had in Los Angeles and Hollywood that were like directors and producers that I had always dreamed of working with, some of them have been the most horrifying, horrific experiences I've had. You know, the ones I thought were the ones I thought were going
to
be the most
finally I get to work with, and then you get there and your dreams are dashed.
That's right. What is it? You never meet your fans, or never meet your idols. Never meet your idols. There you go. So some of them have been. They were. It was a hard pill to swallow. You know, a couple of them.
For me, it's like maybe 25%. 3 out of 4, they lived up to my expectations, and then 1 out of 4, I was just like, what the hell is this guy? Wow, what a bummer.
Yeah. That's why it's called Hollywood. It's the disease of perception is what it is. It's always the business of perception, the disease of perception.
So,
well, you know, it's always a pleasure connecting with you, and you know, I know we're going to do something soon ourselves, and it's going to involve Xenophobia, the second chapter. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that out loud, but you know, I absolutely
involved
in that. Yeah, absolutely. So.
Anytime,
so
same with you. Anytime you want me, just give me a call. I'd love working with you guys. That was a fun day. We sat around to Joe's house. We sat around his house and shot and with some great actors. Alexander was over there.
Uh-huh.
Was Alexander there? Yeah.
Alexander Kane was there, and Brink Stevens was there, and Baker Chase Powell was there, and Kirsten was there. Kirsten Renton was there, and Davis.
I can't remember the lady's name. She's such a phenomenal actress. I really like her.
She's going to be upset at me that I didn't say her name. But they're all wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we had some capers. We always have. What is a movie set without having some interesting capers on it? The whole experience with the makeup over the eyes that we did with you, but of course we barreled through it and got what we needed, you know.
If there isn't drama on a movie set, that you've got hundreds of billions of dollars and plenty of time.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's not
if
a real
you're
movie,
shooting
that's
for
dumb.
If you're shooting for under 40 million, there better be some drama on that set.
There better be someone throwing a temper tantrum, at least.
For sure.
Yeah. Even on 100 million, I'm sure there's quite a few temper tantrums, you know.
Oh, I'm sure. Because at that point, the real, you know, people's houses are on the line. So
right,
the lighting
can't get
the light up in time. People freak out. I've blown my top a number of times on set, and I'm not. And that actually, every time that I have, I haven't ever done it where I regretted it, where I was like, you know what, that wasn't called for. I could have done it in a better way, but it was something that needed to happen, and it actually did, in the end, push the movie forward and get people's concentration back on making the film. And maybe a few people think I'm a dick now for that particular day, but it needed to happen. So I've never blown my top and super regretted it, but I have blown my top a few times.
I have blown my top. I have regretted it in the moment, but I have also been able to go back and make amends or been able to reestablish relationships with people. And, you know, but that's like with every aspect of my life. And as working on a movie set, you know, I mean, I've never worked on a movie set where I haven't blown my top, where it hasn't been like the average person probably would have done the same thing, maybe not as extreme that I did, but. There was still
a
reason
there.
Can
you guys hear me now?
Hey,
Mike, we can hear you.
It's the host.
We can hear you.
Finally, I've been trying for so long. Oh, how terrible. and I practiced and everything, too, so I don't know what happened. I'll blame it on Blog Talk Radio. So.
Yeah.
But I can hear you guys fine, so go ahead and continue.
Well, that's good.
We were just talking about drama on movie sets, and you know, it's not a real movie unless there's someone throwing a temper tantrum at some point. And, you know, I work with one director, and right before, you know, you make it, I've worked with him for 20 years. And one of the things he likes to say right before he cuts you the check is, you know, I just want it to be easy peasy, no drama. We're having fun. We're not delivering babies, is what he says. Yeah, because there's always some sort of drama that goes, like hands down, there's always some sort of drama that goes on the set. In fact, and I'm not going to say any names, I actually at one point in one of his sets picked someone up off the ground by their shirt and just threw them against the wall and said, "You're not helping," is what I said. "You're not helping."
I got one. I got one. I was working on this movie, and sometimes it's the littlest of things. People don't realize sometimes what the different artists on a set go through, because on a movie you've got all the great arts. You've got painting and design and sculpture and poetry and writing and music and all the great artists together to try to make one painting, right? So,
right.
And some of the different artists don't talk each other's language, you know. So, I was one time was doing a scene, and it was just as simple as I was on the phone to a drug dealer, and I had to get the tone in my voice right. You know, when you're on a phone and you're yelling at somebody, but you keep the level of your voice at a specific volume because you don't want the rest of the room to hear, but you still have to. And so it's tough to get that cadence in your voice. But at the same time, the lighting guy was having a problem because this branch kept getting in front of the light from outside. So every time I got the cadence right and I thought the performance was right, the branch would throw a shadow onto my face. And it was like take 30 or something. And I'm looking at a bunch of grips and you know, first-time crew people just standing there staring at me in my eye line. And it's like take 30, and I'm pissed off because I want to get to the next scene. And I just lit up, and I was like, "Get the F out of my eye line, you stupid son of a bitch. Move out of my way. Get out of my way. God damn." You know, just lost it. And these poor kids all moved. And by yelling at that volume, it really keyed me into the acting and gave me the place where I needed to be, the energy that I needed to hit the scene. And I nailed it on the next take, and the branch was in the right place. So, but then I yelled at all these kids, just screamed at them, you know, like a vicious person.
Oh.
So like you said, sometimes at the end, at lunch, I went found each and every one of those guys you know, profusely said, "Look, guys, I'm sorry. I did, that's nothing personal, but I had to do that in order to find the scene, and we found it. I'm so sorry that I took it out on you. It wasn't your fault, you know."
That's right. That's right. It takes a real professional and a real well-rounded human with a real human nature to do that. You don't see people. There are many people that don't know what it means to make an amends, to clean up their wreckage, to move forward in a positive way. People don't know how to do that. The mess, and they know how to, sulk away.
Sure do.
Or just turn the upper cheek. Oh, it's okay. Whatever. But it takes a real human being to be able to go and to sweep up the mess that they made and say, "Look, I want to clean this up, and I want to move forward, and I want to make sure that everybody understands, you know, and I want to do my, I want to do what's necessary to make it right, so we can all move forward together." And that's the kind of people that I enjoy working with. You know, that's the kind of people I like to be surrounded by, to be honest with you. Yeah.
And I also like, you know, every time I put a team together, I always want the hotheads, the talented hotheads that are liable to blow their top. But at the same time, I always hire a few, like, of the really, really people that are really good at diplomacy and really good at, like, you know, getting in between those messes and cleaning them up. So we all serve a function on the set. I know this guy, Tim Gagliardo, that I've never seen get – I actually one time have seen him get angry, and I've worked on four films with him. But his anger, like his level of blow up was like a hiccup compared to when I blow up. But he deals with the stress of film set so well, and he's so good at seeing both sides of the issue and going in and just settling it and getting the best out of everybody. So it's always a mix of characters on a set.
Very nice. Well, I have a deadline tonight, and I have to get into the effects studio. So I'm going to have to bow out gracefully now. It's always a pleasure connecting with you.
What are you doing?
I'm completing the hero demon for the climaximum of a new movie that's coming out. It's no secret; everybody knows I'm working on it. It's called The Barn 2, and it's directed by Justin Seaman. And it's being shot up in West Virginia right now as we speak. They're doing the final scenes, and I have to have this thing done tonight so it can air dry for the next 4 days and then be shoved into a box to be shipped out for them to shoot on Monday of next week. So, I got to get the demon on tonight. Anyways, it's always a pleasure connecting with you. Mac, thank you for inviting me on the show. Manu, we will be in touch. Be safe out there, everybody, okay?
Sorry, I missed
be good to yourself. No worries. We'll talk more soon. Take care. Good
okay.
Night.
Thanks, Joe. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Joe Castro, everybody.
Yes.
Yeah, Joe's
the special effects master.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
one
sure.
of the best.
Yeah, he is. And he's a nice guy. I mean,
oh,
you are
really
too.
Nice. Thank you.
And I'm not sure what all is on here because I talked for a really long time and told me I was on air, so hopefully it's all on there. Sounds Blog Talk Radio.
I hope so too. It feels like we're on air, so hopefully we are.
it does say that we are, but it also said that I was before, and you guys weren't hearing me because I can hear you guys. But you weren't hearing me. That's why I had to call back, leave, and then call back in, and then finally that.
Okay.
So,
but you,
I didn't hear
were
everything.
You listening to the show when me and Joe were just chatting?
Yeah, I could hear part of it because I was trying to get back in. Because somehow I was like dropped out.
Then I'm guessing we're live. Hey, everybody.
Yeah. So. But they've heard everything that you said. You're Manu Ntirame, and plus I said it too, so they know who you are. And heard I had said, I went over like a whole bunch of stuff of what you've done, and I didn't do the newer stuff like what you guys talked about, Zootopia, because I was saving that for later. And so we could talk about Star Trek a little bit. You guys didn't talk about that, right?
No, we didn't. But everybody should go check out Xenophobia. It's a little film. It was made for like almost no money and a lot of heart by some really talented people in this town. And if you like a good, funny B-movie slasher alien blood and guts story, go check it out. I think you'll enjoy Xenophobia, especially when you know that it was made for almost nothing. It looks like it had a decent budget, and it's quite a fun little ride. Xenophobia. I think you can see it free on Amazon Prime right now. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I think so. Yeah, I know that I've seen it. I really enjoyed it. We watched it. My family and I watched it at one of our last get-togethers, and everybody just loved it. It was a hoot. I mean, it was good. Everybody did a good job.
You know what's missing from indie film? When indie film started, like the first, the heyday of indie film back in like the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, all the indie films, when you went to the theater and you went to the indie cinemas, you would know what the budgets were. You would know,
right.
Wow, this film was made for $14,000. This film was made for $2 million. It was sort of a part of the marketing process was how they did this movie and what they spent. And nowadays you don't get to see on the streaming platforms. There's a ton of movies to choose from, but you can't see the budgets. And sometimes knowing a budget puts you in a certain frame of mind for watching a film, because you don't expect the same thing out of a couple $100,000 budget than you do a couple $1 million budget or a couple $100 million budget. And
oh, for sure.
I wish that the marketing of indie films was more, that still included that aspect of, hey, these guys made this film for blankety blank and it's either genius or it's not good. But like, you know, when Kevin Smith first had Clerks done in the theaters, there were all these articles out about it, that it was the first film made for under $20,000. I still don't believe that he made that film for only $14,000. First of all, because it was shot on black and white 16mm or black and white 35mm. I don't know, but it was shot on film. And it's almost impossible to shoot a movie that cheap on film unless somebody gave you the film and gave you the camera. And maybe if they got everything free and they did it not, no union, maybe if everything was a gift, then and it was just craft service, because just shooting, you know, and feeding 35 people for two weeks to 3 weeks costs $14,000.
Really?
People have, that's another thing that people outside the industry just have no idea how hard it is to keep the cost down when it comes to shooting a movie. When you watch a good movie, you don't realize that, oh my gosh, the room that they're sitting in was actually built on a studio set so that they could get the angles for the camera. You just think, oh, they got a house somewhere, they found this place, they rented the house. And then sometimes renting a house costs $10,000 for the day or $7,000 for the day. And then there's cameras and lights and crew members and paychecks and star paychecks and union fees. And if you do a SAG movie, all the money that you pay your actors, you have to give to SAG up front. It's called a SAG bond.
Right.
So that if you don't pay your actors, SAG uses your bond to pay them, and then you wait to get that money back. So that money has to be put into your budget. You basically pay the actors twice to shoot the movie, and then you get the money back at the end, as long as you pay them the first time. But that money has to be raised. So, you know, if your actor fee is $50,000 or something, then you have to give SAG at least $25,000, I think, or something like that. It may even be $50,000, depending on the contract that you're working under.
Oh, I know a lot goes into making movies. I'm one of those people that when I watch a movie, I look at everything and think it's all amazing, because I'm like, oh, yeah, they had to do this to get it to look like that. They had to do this to that. And I think like that when I'm watching a movie, and I always watch all the credits.
Yeah.
I'm one of those
and,
people.
You know, like, but a bunch of folks out there will see, like, two guys sitting on a boat, and they don't realize that there's like three more boats and a whole film crew out there steadying the cameras and maybe tying off the boat so that they can get a good shot. And, you know, they don't realize how much is going on outside of that picture that they're looking at, or what went into the picture. Just the cost of, if you have a hallway, for example, in sci-fi, this always happens. You know, very often you've got to build a ship, and you've got to build like a bridge, some hallways, and a couple of sets at the very least. And then you probably do a few green screen if you're shooting an indie film. But just the hallway itself can cost you $100,000 to build, because you have to build a structural hallway that you can fit lights and all and different things into. And those lights are expensive, and you can rent them, but still, then you have to buy insurance for them, and there's just so many hidden costs that the average movie fan doesn't know about, you know.
Well, a lot of average movie fans don't want to know that stuff. They just want to watch them. They're not into the nuances. Yeah. I'm into the nuances. But thinking of getting money for a movie, did you already talk about Fifth Passenger?
Fifth Passenger, we mentioned it a little bit. I only mentioned it when I came on that I had produced it, but we could talk about Fifth Passenger. We should talk about Fifth Passenger. It's now free on IMDb TV, on Tubi, on Amazon Prime. And you can get a DVD or a Blu-ray at fifthpassenger.com, or Epic Pictures Group as well, who's distributing our film, has them. Redbox had it for a while, but Fifth Passenger came out a while ago now, so Redbox no longer has it. But it's available basically everywhere, Xbox, PlayStation, everywhere that you stream movies, you can find it. And it's basically the story of it's a couple hundred years into the future, and mankind has left Earth. And it's the story of a few passengers that get caught on a first-class escape pod that gets blown off a major cargo ship going to the new Earth. And they're running out of air, and they're running out of food, water, and life support, and then some other interesting problems come their way. It's sort of like Hitchcock's Lifeboat in Space mixed with Alien. And I got a bunch of my Star Trek friends to join us for the film. We got Marina Sirtis and Doug Jones and Tim Russ and Armin Shimerman. And it's a great little ensemble horror thriller. It's good writing. And we had, in many cases in the indie film world, we had very little money, and I'm so proud of, in that film in particular, of what we did with those funds, because I don't think I'm supposed to say this, but I'm a producer of the movie, so I don't care what my friends that are also on the movie think. We only had $170,000 to shoot that film, and to me it looks like a $2 million movie, and I'm so proud of how we were able to stretch those dollars. And just, that's the other thing that the average moviegoer doesn't understand, how hard it is to get 50 people to donate their time, energy, and commitment to, while getting paid, you know, close, a little over minimum wage at the most, to make one of these things. It's very hard to do, especially with name actors. So it was a joy to get all those Star Trek actors to believe that we could put out a piece of high quality cinema for that little bit of money. And it was a joy to actually get it done. So I hope people check it out. And people have. Fifth Passenger's been watched by quite a few, but if you haven't seen it, you should.
Oh, and it is a really, really good movie. That's another one that I showed at a family get together, talking about the money part of it. After we watched it, because I hadn't mentioned that it was, you know, one of those that wasn't very big. And after we watched it, somebody said, "Oh, so this is one of your friends that had more money for a big budget," because they said it was a several million. And I said, "No, I'm pretty sure it's less than $200,000. I was taking a guess.
Yeah.
But so there you go. They thought it was a couple million dollar picture. That's how good everything was.
It's what it looks like. That's, to me, it's what it looks like. And yeah, I've been producing now for a little over 10 years, and I've got a pretty good idea what your normal look compared to dollars equates to. And yeah, I think we cheated some. We pulled so many amazing favors to get that movie done. And one of the best things about the movie is the CG work that was done of space and of the ship itself. And a good friend, Tobias Richter, and his company called Lightworks out of Germany was kind enough to do all those shots for us. And that's what makes the movie look like it's like it's a, got a lot more money than it has. He was willing to do those shots because he was a fan of Star Trek and a fan of the people making the film, and a good friend, and just, you know, worked for a whole lot less than he normally would to allow us to get our story on the screen. So hats off to Mr. Richter and Lightworks.
Oh, definitely. Hats off to everybody, actually, because, like I said, my family, they were in awe of that movie because it had a little bit of everything, you know, romance, a little bit of drama, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of spooky stuff. So it had a little bit of everything, and it looked good. It looked really good. It was like, wow, this stuff just pops, especially the explosions, which people tend to like.
I always tell people, I think that our biggest mistake on that film, and I'm really proud of it. I think we did a wonderful job, but our biggest mistake on that film is about the first 10 to 12 minutes is this big sequence where the mega ship that they're on before they get onto the little pod hits an asteroid field. And we made the mistake of thinking that we could get that part shot and get all the effect shots done well for the money that we had, and we were wrong. So it's a bummer because the first 10, 12 minutes of the film, I think, are the worst part of the film. And then once they get on the pod, I think the film just takes off from that point on. It's quite a good movie. And I think we lose, every once in a while, we lose some people that are watching because they watch the first 10 minutes and they don't get sucked in, or they get turned off by a couple of the bad effects in that sequence. And
right.
Then they miss out on a great movie because once we get into the pod, the movie's pretty spotless from that point out.
Yeah, I've watched quite a few movies where the 10 minutes were kind of, but then after I start watching it, I'm like, hey, this movie's really, really good. And I end up loving the thing. So sometimes you just got to give a movie a shot.
Yeah, it'll creep up on you if you sit there and sit through that, a couple of bad visual effects sequences, the story will grab you. And then everything after that, too, the visual effects sequences are great. And if you're a fan of, like, horror thrillers with practical effects, too, we've got a gross little creature in that movie that's neat, and some real on-screen camera effects that are pretty good as well.
Well, we're down to, like, a little over 6 minutes, so I figured you wanted to go over the circuit a little bit.
The circuit?
Yeah. I would think you would want to go
over
the circuit.
Yeah, I was talking about it a little bit with Joe, but the circuitfilm.com, it's okay. If people want to look at the circuit, we do need help. We're looking to raise another $400,000 to $500,000 to pay for our A-list actors. And we have three A-list actors that are willing to sign on to the film that aren't on the website. But go check out the website, and you'll see the film and the nature of the film. Basically, we're trying to make comedy film in the sci-fi comedy genre. I always call it Galaxy Quest meets Shaun of the Dead, or Galaxy Quest meets This is the End. We've got amazing actors if you go look at the website, and then picture those actors plus three genuine movie stars, and you have the circuit. The first film, it started as a project called the circuitfilms.com. It was going to be 10 episodes of science fiction that all take place in this one city called Urbiesa, this futuristic city. And then once we raised a little money and we got some investors involved and some A-list actors, we decided the best way to launch the circuit into a TV show would be to make a feature film that's a hit, and then hopefully spawn an opportunity for us to go around and shop a spinoff of the film as a TV series. And so episode one, which is called Star Crew, this broad comedy that I've been talking about, introduces everyone to the concept of this city of Urbiesa. And then the rest of the film you know, has its own plot, just like the original concept. But the idea for the TV show is laid out in the feature film. And if anyone wants to learn more about it, go to thecircusfilm.com. We have incredible actors that have already signed on, including people like Robert Picardo and Dub Jones and people from Star Wars and Game of Thrones and Star Trek and Babylon 5 and Farscape and all sorts of sci-fi and The Hobbit and Doctor Who and fantasy genres. But then we also, over the last year, have gotten 3 A-listers that are willing to make the movie. So if we can raise the money to pay for those A-listers, we're guaranteed a $2.5 million budget. And we're hoping to shoot November, December this year, if our 2 actors can find it in their schedule and if we can raise the money by that time. And if COVID-19 allows us to shoot where we want to shoot, because in order to get it done for $2.5 million, we have to shoot in a particular tax incentive state. But if all goes well, we'll be shooting this year, and if not, we'll be shooting early next year. And I really want people to go check out thecircusfilm.com. And if you're interested and excited about it, go ahead and contact me directly at monuentereme@gmail.com, and I can send you more information about investing and can send you the lookbook and the budget and the schedule and all the where going with the project.
That's good information for people to have. Isn't there another thing on there too? I mean, I know there is, but I'm supposed to post it as a question, where you don't have to have a lot of money. You can go into like a shop and like donate $10, $15.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You don't have to, if you want to support the project, we've got all sorts of little fun, like, you know, t-shirts and hats and shirts and a copy of the DVD and stuff that you can donate. And you don't even have to, you know, get the goodie bag that will come after we finish production, but you can just donate your money if you want to the project. There's a little donate here button on the website, and you can click on it and PayPal or credit card or whatever. Send us anything you got. Even a dollar helps.
Well, I think it's a worthwhile project, so hopefully this will help a little bit. I don't know if things got, pardon my French, but screwed up a little bit here. But hopefully it'll help.
Well, people have no idea. They really have no idea how much Star Crew is going to be a hit. We've been working on this script for over 2 years. It's really funny. We've got a great cast and a really talented team. Keep your ears out and your eyes open for Star Crew coming late 2020-2021.
Okay, we've got about
Otherwise,
60 seconds
left. Otherwise, it's been fun to be here. And
so
thank you for the interview. Sorry we had a rough start, but hey, they only get better as you keep knocking them out. So I'm glad to be on that. Was this the first show?
Yeah, this was the first show, so I expected problems, but I didn't expect a problem like that. And I even practiced and everything. So, well, happens. Anything you want to say to anybody?
If anybody wants to follow me at Monuente Reme on all the social media. I'm most active on Twitter. Thank you for the interview, Cheryl, and keep making your show, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you very much, Manu. You were wonderful. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Okay, that was Monuente Reme. There's like 10 seconds left, so I have to fill up the time. And I was just told 10 seconds. So thank you for listening. Sorry about the big snafu. Try to tune again next time. Hey, Rock. Well, I'm sorry. I knew that you would come in and start yelling, and I was trying to be on the radio. What's the matter? What did you do to him? Oh, poor little Rock. He was probably telling you I had my door closed. Can you let me pass here? Oh, honey, I'm sorry. Yeah, sweet boy. You don't have to go, Rock. Because he's mad, because I wasn't like patting him right at that moment. Aww. Well, come here and I'll pat you. Hey, you act like you want me to pet you, but you stay about a mile away. Now he's giving this dirty look. Okay, yeah, see how much deer it is when you come close?